Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and we have a wonderful topic today, stress as the missing diagnosis. If you ask someone if they have any stress, they either roll their eyes saying, doesn't everybody, or they just laugh saying, who, me? We all have stressors in our lives, at home, at work, even on our dinner plate. Many assume it's just that way, and if we feel worn out, there's nothing to do but fill up on energy drinks or medications. But my guest this week on Family First says this is a formula for ruin. Peter M. McCarthy is author of the new book Adrenaline Nation, in which he describes how the chronic stress of modern life is not only making us sick, but is also bankrupting our economy. He'll share the changes that we can make to turn this process around, both at the public level and the private level, and regain our ability to protect our health from stress. He holds a doctorate in traditional naturopathy from Trinity College of Natural Health and is president of the Texas Complementary and Alternative Medicine Association and chair of the Texas Health Freedom Coalition, the largest state-level grassroots natural health advocacy network in the nation. He's board certified as a traditional naturopath and a sought-after professional in the field of CAM, which is Complementary and Alternative Medicine. He's CEO of AHI Productions, a media company which is creator of NHN TV, the planet's first TV network devoted to natural health and green living news, education, and entertainment. He has a wonderful website, and he's a past member of the Advisory Committee of the American Naturopathic Certification Board. He graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy in 1972 and has kept himself healthy since then. His interest in naturopathy developed in the 80s and 90s as he saw the impact of stressors on the health of those around him. He and his wife, Nancy, live in Austin, Texas, and have three grown children. Welcome to Family First, Peter.
Thank you, Randy. It's a pleasure to be back with you again.
Yes, my pleasure to have you back. There's so much information in your book, and we really didn't get to cover a lot of, well, of course, we can't cover everything in the book, but a lot of the topics which I thought were so valuable, I wanted our listeners to get more of you. So welcome back. So I want to just start out orienting us again about what is stress and what the components are. You've developed this wonderful way of looking at the stresses in our life as a stress stack with the five different factors. Can you summarize those for us, Peter?
Sure, absolutely. And just as a way of framing this, the definition of stress that I derive in Adrenaline Nation is any stimulus which initiates the body's fight-flight response as well as the results of that stimulus. So, and that's pretty much mainstream as far as the definition of stress is concerned. But moving to the stress stack, there's actually six blocks. There are dietary influences, the foods and beverages that cause stress, lifestyle influences, things like driving in rush hour traffic, perhaps dealing with your boss or your family relationships, sleep deprivation, the cognitive filter, the combination of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual influences that determine the prism through which you view the world and therefore how you respond to stress. The nutritional gap, the difference between what your body gets and what it needs nutritionally to sustain a healthy stress response. Toxic influences, chemical, biological, radiological, toxic influences that cause stress in our bodies. And then there's the trigger factor, perhaps that seminal, significant life event like a job loss, the death of a spouse, or an automobile accident that tips your body over the edge of its ability to respond to stress and into overt illness.
It's just a great way to look at all the things that influence us, and everybody can relate to every one of those levels. And yeah, I was thinking of the trigger factor as different, but it is the sixth thing that often we think we're just going along doing fine, but then some event and all of a sudden all these things go wrong and we think, well, it just came out of the blue when really we were creating it for 20, 30, 40 years.
That's exactly right. And that's why I called it the trigger factor. It's literally in a stress-related context, the straw that breaks the camel's back, the thing that exceeds your ability to respond effectively and now causes your body to enter into health restoration as opposed to being in health maintenance. And we all know people who have had those kinds of life experiences where, for all intents and purposes, their health is never the same again. So it really does point up very clearly the necessity to better manage the other five blocks of the stress stack so that that trigger factor point is never reached.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, I'd like to back up a little. You said that stress is anything that initiates the fight or flight response, and we all know we have it. You call your book Adrenaline Nation. Adrenaline's one of those major hormones that starts up the fight or flight response. And most people think, okay, that works. You know, I get excited about something. And I love the story you tell in the book about the being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. It's one of my favorite stories that I used, and I just loved it to see it in your book. That's really what that system was designed for. And so what's the difference between being chased up a tree by a saber-toothed tiger and what we're experiencing today, Peter?
Well, you know, the interesting part about it, Randy, is that our bodies really don't know the difference. You know, the saber-toothed tiger in 21st century America has been replaced by stopping short behind somebody in a traffic jam, or being confronted by an angry boss, or perhaps having too much caffeine in the morning and it revs up your system. The body really doesn't know the difference between that and a true life-threatening situation. And it's because we tap that stress response so often for non-life-threatening situations that we've wound up in the situation we're in today in American society. We're so stressed out about things that in reality don't have a component of life or death associated with them. Yet we continue to do that. And later on in the book, in Adrenaline Nation, I quote from one of my favorite authors, Reverend Wayne Muller, who talks about how we treat this energy bank, that I call it, as an endless resource. And we all wind up, or many of us wind up 20 or 30 years down the road, dealing with illness and wondering, what happened to me? Why did this happen? Well, the root cause in most cases is chronic stress.
Yes, and I want to really emphasize that, because so often people think, well, my dad had a heart condition, or my mother got cancer, or my family tends towards diabetes. But what they don't realize is that the stressors can put them over the line, and maybe helping keep these five things in a better place, you might avoid that, right?
That's exactly right. And that's why I created the stress stack model, so that people could look at each block of their own personal stress stack. And make no mistake, it's individual to each person because the mix of stressors are different. But look at your own stress stack and look at those items that you have, first of all, direct control over, and do something about those. But then look at those other ones and really look and start assessing how important is it that stressor remain in your life. You know, the American Psychological Association comes up with a stress survey, usually around this time of year, and I'll be interested to see what their 2012 survey has to say. But consistently throughout the years, their survey has shown that people have seriously considered leaving their current job because of the stress level. And some people would say, well, gee, what are you going to do? You're going to have to sell your house. You're going to have to get rid of your two cars. You won't have to be able to go to the country club. Maybe that's not a bad thing if the stress level that you're under in order to be able to keep all of those things is going to ultimately drive you to the point of serious illness. And that's a qualitative decision that everybody has to make. But I've found that more and more people around me have left, in some cases, very well-paying corporate jobs because they just wanted to have a different lifestyle and a healthier one. And chronic stress was the reason they left.
Yeah, that factor comes up so much when I talk about parenting with families, that both parents work high-paying jobs so that they can have three cars and take their children to all the different after-school things, but the parents are exhibiting so much stress that they're irritable when they try to talk to the kids, or they don't have time to even be with them in a relaxing way. And so that kind of qualitative decision, you need to take a look at it and say, wait a minute, maybe removing some of that stress, maybe the kid can borrow the family car rather than have his own, and that kind of thing, and back off from all the stressors on the family. So that comes up in so many different situations.
Well, it really does. And, you know, one of my favorite authors and speakers is a man by the name of T. Harv Eker. And he wrote a New York Times bestseller called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. And one of the underlying principles of his book is that your outer world reflects your inner world. And to the extent your inner world is dominated by stress, well, make no mistake, your outer world is going to be also. And one of the things he talks about is, interestingly enough, I mean, we're talking about a book that's about making money, but one of the things he talks about in terms of creating a synchronicity between your outer and inner worlds is want for less. You know, is it really that important that, as you, from your example, that your child has their own car? Is it really that important that you have that membership at the country club if the additional effort and expenditure of energy that you have to create is causing you stress? That's an individual decision, but I think there's a lot of evidence, and I bring much of it out in Adrenaline Nation, to show that some of that stress can actually be alleviated if we do want for less and we simplify our lifestyle.
Exactly. And I don't want listeners to think we're just talking about upper middle class that have extra cars and country memberships. It's also true when you're a lot closer to the edge in the budget. It may be better, rather than trying to drive the child to daycare and have them have a new costume for their baseball team, you might want to back off of that and just be there for the child as a much less stressed parent. So I want to include, you know, all economic groups in this discussion. You talk in your book about something called catabolic threshold. Can you explain that?
Sure. Well, the word catabolic, it's an adjective which describes destructive processes in the body. And it's normally used in terms of breaking down food that we ingest in our bodies into its component parts so that it can be turned ultimately into energy to sustain the body. But it also means, in a broader sense, any kind of destructive process that's taking place. And once you cross that catabolic threshold, and it typically happens when one or more events that comprise the trigger factor are evident in your life. Once you cross that catabolic threshold, your body starts to experience destructive processes because you've exceeded its ability to adapt to stress. And it's the catabolic threshold is really the point where you switch from health maintenance to health restoration. And typically that means entering into the conventional healthcare system to deal with some sort of overt disease or chronic illness.
Stay tuned for more from Peter M. McCarthy and how stress is our missing diagnosis.
sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking with Peter M. McCarthy about stress and how it's the missing diagnosis for many of the problems that we face today, especially in chronic illness as we age. And we were talking about the stress stack, the six factors that you need to look at in your own life to see how they add up. And even those things you can't control, I want to talk about the cognitive filter that you can work to change the way you interpret the experiences you're having at work, at home, or dealing with any part of your life. Peter is the chair of the Texas Health Freedom Coalition and a certified traditional naturopath and a sought-after professional in the area of complementary and alternative medicine, and also the author of The Adrenaline Nation, which brings all of this information together in a very easily comprehensible and convincing way. So what kinds of things can we do in our workplace or in our schools or even at the policy level to help people understand this problem and do something about it?
Well, you know, you really did hit the nail on the head with respect to the fact that chronic stress is not amenable to a magic bullet solution, either on the individual or the organizational level. You're talking about something that's multidimensional. And unfortunately, we've been conditioned in our society to think in magic bullet terms. Take this drug or get this procedure done and you'll be fine. Well, when you look at the multitude of factors that comprise each individual stress stack in our society, the fact of the matter is you can't address all of them adequately with just one thing. So you do have to take a more holistic approach toward it. And one of the things that I talk about in Adrenaline Nation is, and I say that over and over again, is you really have to be looking at all the different levels of society. So, for example, you know, on an individual level, One of the things that I emphasize very heavily is don't skimp on your sleep. That's a lifestyle factor that contributes greatly to our stress, not only from the standpoint of what sleep deprivation itself does, but what we have to do to compensate for that sleep deprivation. And think about how many times you've either experienced a poor night's sleep yourself or you know someone who has. What's the first thing they do? They grab something with caffeine in it and perhaps an accompanying food that has white flour and processed sugar. And those are three of the dietary influences that actually add to your stress load. But as you pointed out, there are solutions that are required and initiatives that are required at the organizational and or business level, at the governmental level, at the healthcare level, but also at societal levels. And I think a lot of it is really to become more aware of the fact, number one, that you've got to be able to address it at all of these levels. It's not just a simple solution of one or two things that you can do, but also that it's going to require some direct involvement by you as a citizen in American society. And that's one of the things that I emphasize very heavily throughout the book, the importance of self-empowerment with education and equipping yourself with resources so that at every level you can be an effective advocate for alleviating your own stress.
That's very powerful, and I don't want people to give up if they say, well, the government's not doing anything and the medical world isn't doing anything, and so I should just give up, because there is so much you can do, which we've already touched on. But it makes so much sense to look at the whole picture, too, and be able to see that there are things we can do individually, as you said, to empower ourselves to be advocates and at in the workplace, in the school, and certainly, when we're voting or when we're talking to our doctor. You talk about the pharmaceutical medical complex. I thought that was fascinating because I'm old enough to remember Eisenhower talking about the military-industrial complex and the risks of these really high-power, high-budget elements in our society really conditioning how we think about our health and thinking that we don't have control. So can you talk more about how people can take control and not just give up because they feel their doctor or their government doesn't understand?
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why I was a founding member of the Texas Health Freedom Coalition. And as you mentioned at the intro of the show, my fellow executive committee members have honored me with allowing me to serve them as chair for the last now almost 6 years. When you look at the fact that those powerful influences are at work at the behest of the medical pharmaceutical insurance complex. The fact of the matter is the only way that you're going to be able to make a meaningful difference is to get involved and to confront those interests that you believe are not serving either you or the people that are close to you and or your business or your friends and acquaintances, whatever your circle or circles that you move in. That's part of self-empowerment. And, you know, what I'm really talking about here is good citizenship. When you look back at the founding of our country, many of the most important decisions that were made in the founding of the United States and America had their genesis in the coffee houses and the common houses, the taverns of the time where people sat and discussed these issues, hugely important issues of the day, and banded together to be able to make a difference. Well, we've kind of fallen out of that mindset, thinking that we really can't make a difference. But, you know, I've seen time after time where people have, for example, here in Austin at the Texas legislature, come and made moving testimony before governmental bodies, House or Senate committees, and have made a substantive difference in either helping to pass bills that they believe would serve the common good or to oppose those that didn't serve the common good. And, you know, that's really an integral part, I think, of dealing with the problem of chronic stress. We have to make our healthcare system more responsive to that issue. And since the healthcare system is by and large governed at the state level, getting involved at the state level with those issues that are of direct concern to you is really an integral part of being able to solve this problem.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. I was wondering if you have your book in front of you. I love the quote you gave from Thomas Jefferson, and it's almost 200 years old now, but it's so apropos of what you just said on page 357. Do you have that? Do you mind reading that?
Hang on just a second. I've got it just out of reach. Give me 2 seconds.
Okay, sure. Yes. I think that it's really true that we need to empower ourselves, and this part of good citizenship, that if we know that our families are being overstressed by things that can be changed, that we need to get out there and say so. There was a report just recently that linked sleep to children's behavior in school, and even a half hour extra of sleep for a child in the range of 5 to 11 made a significant difference in their cooperative behavior during the day in school. That says tremendous amount. Also, studies have shown that that you can't just catch up in the weekend. And Peter McCarthy mentions that in his book. You can't just, go on 6 hours of sleep through the week and then think if you stay in bed an extra 4 or 5 hours, you're going to make it up. The body does not work that way. Okay, Peter, you to share that wonderful quote from Thomas Jefferson's letter.
Thank you for that. Yes, and I've got it right here. And it's actually an excerpt from a letter from Jefferson to his friend William C. Jarvis, written on September 28, 1820. And he says, quote, "I know of no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education," unquote. And I think that's something that has been lost for many years in this society, especially at the governmental level. We tend to, or the governmental bodies, some of them that I deal with directly here in Texas, tend to look at people as almost mindless and that they have to be protected from their own ignorance. And that just goes directly against the quote that Thomas Jefferson, that I shared from Thomas Jefferson. We have to become empowered in this society as individuals, not say it's up to somebody else. And that extends down in my mind and in the minds of a growing number of people across this country to how we take care of our health. You know, I ask in another section of Adrenaline Nation, if we conducted a nationwide survey that asked just one question: who's responsible for your health care? How many people do you think would say, "I am"? Or alternatively, how many people would say, "my doctor," or "my insurance company," or "my corporate benefits department"? And we've really abdicated that responsibility for taking care of our health because we've been societally conditioned to believe we're not qualified to do that. Well, you know, this is our body. It's our most important asset while we're alive on. Isn't it time for us to shift that thinking and start looking at it from the standpoint of, I'm responsible for my health, and I better get educated about it because there's nobody that's going to take better care of it than me?
Exactly. Yes, there's in the past, much of the self-care was handed down generation to generation. You know, your grandmother said, eat more of the fresh tomatoes and less of the cookies. And now that kind of wisdom has been, like you said, conditioned out of us, that somehow the insurance company or the doctor knows better, or he doesn't have time to tell you about nutrition, but he can give you a pill. So we really need to think, we need to remember that we, no one else is looking out for our health the way we can in our day-to-day lives.
Well, you know, and the unfortunate part about this is that we're really having to do this by necessity, Randy, because as I point out again and again in Adrenaline Nation, the adverse impact of financial interest on healthcare is large and it continues to grow. And it's unfortunate that even a well-meaning doctor can give someone advice about a prescription drug use or something of that nature without really knowing what's behind the research on that prescription drug. And there are numerous examples, too many to count, where financial interest has intruded inappropriately in the delivery of healthcare services in this country. And so we really do have to, I think, take a more discerning view of what kind of services were being offered and not automatically think that because somebody's got a shingle hanging up behind their desk on a wall in an office that they're more qualified to determine what's best for your health than you are.
Yeah, you make the point in your book that most medical schools still don't spend more than an hour or two on nutrition, for instance. And I try to tell people there's a reason for that. Doctors are not focused on prevention. They get a license because they deal with dangerous stuff. They deal with drugs and surgery. They're allowed to actually cut you. So they need a license, but they're taught what to do when you're falling apart. They're not taught how normal, healthy people are supposed to lead their lives. So there's a reason they don't spend a whole lot of time on nutrition in the medical schools. But then for us to assume that they know about this is really a mistake on our part.
Well, it really is. And, you know, unfortunately, as a profession, the medical profession has promoted the idea for quite a few years that the doctor is the unquestioned authority on all matters of health. And unfortunately for us, I think, unfortunately for the medical community, that perception is gradually being undermined primarily by the explosion of health information that's available on the Internet. And while some of the medical professionals are certainly accommodating to that and recognize that there is a lot of good and valid information there, as I point out in Adrenaline Nation, there's quite a few of them that really take exception to that. And, you know, my answer to them or my response to them is you're going to have to catch up with the times. You may have been taught in medical school that you're the unquestioned authority, but guess what? There's a huge worldwide database out there that covers more than you or any other human being on this planet can ever hope to know about. And rather than resist a patient bringing in new information for you that may not only help them but other patients as well, why not embrace it and make the time to really understand that there's a lot out there that you didn't learn in medical school but is still very valid?
Yes, Peter, I often tell people when they're choosing a medical professional or a health care provider to choose someone who welcomes questions. If they get all nervous and try to put you down for asking too many questions, find another person to counsel you because they need to be in a learning mode. They need to be open to you keeping control and educating yourself about your self-care. We're coming up on another break, Peter, but I wanted to ask you to read again from a wonderful quote you have in Adrenaline Nation from Dr. Benjamin Rush, who signed the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and was a very famous doctor of his time, and that's on page 342. Could you read that for us?
Sure, absolutely. Dr. Rush, who was George Washington's personal physician, said, quote, "Unless we put medical freedom into the Constitution, the time will come when medicine will organize into an undercover dictatorship to restrict the art of healing to one class of men and deny equal privileges to others. The Constitution of the Republic should make a special privilege for medical freedoms as well as religious freedom, unquote. And he was definitely correct in that statement.
Yes, he made a prediction which sounds all too familiar. And I know, as a lawyer, I remember reading the discussions of the Constitution, and basically the response was, we can't list every freedom. And of course, people have control over their bodies and their nutrition and their health. So they just didn't put it in. But it wasn't that they were against it. They assumed that it would stay free. And now we have to be vigilant to preserve that freedom. So we're up on another break, but please stay tuned for more from Peter M. McCarthy and how stress is our missing diagnosis.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RANDYROLFE.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back. We're talking about stress as the missing diagnosis and the real source of the chronic diseases that are affecting so many people. And I just read a study that it's coming earlier and earlier for people, and having lifestyle and fitness not only tends to have them live longer, but even more importantly, it puts off those chronic illnesses that eventually kill people. So Peter McCarthy is a board-certified traditional naturopath and a sought-after professional in the field of CAM, complementary and alternative medicine. He's president of Texas Complementary and Alternative Medicine Association and the chair of Texas Health Freedom Coalition, the largest state-level grassroots natural health advocacy network. And he also is a producer. You can read all about that on his website. And we've been talking about how chronic stress is a major cause, perhaps the major cause of our major causes of death, which haven't changed in 50 years because we're not dealing with the actual causes. And one of the things I like so much in your book, Peter, is how you show how people are kind of ping-ponged back and forth between not enough sleep, and then they take caffeine and carbs to stay awake and alert, and then they don't sleep well again, and then they turn to medications, which are a burden and stimulate the stress response of the adrenaline and the fight or flight response, and we get into this downward spiral. And there are things we can do at every level of the society, which is what we've been talking about, and we do need to look at all those elements. And so I wanted to ask, in your book, you talk about the difference between men's and women's response to stress, and you handle it very delicately. It's not that either sex is more or less prepared for stress, but, our cognitive filters are different because of our culture, and, also our responsibilities are often different. So can you explain a little more about that? I know different hormones as well.
Well, you're absolutely right, Randy. And, you know, I summarize the difference between men and women in terms of dealing with stress as contrasting head in the sand versus climbing the sand dune. And again, I'm not meaning this to be critical of either gender, but simply descriptive of the combination of societal influences that impact how they deal with the health of their own bodies and therefore also the ability to deal with stress. You know, males from a very early age are conditioned to endure stress. This is especially true as they move into their high school years, where they become perhaps leaders of organizations or teams, and they're really conditioned to not complain very much about the discomforts that they experience, even within their own bodies. It's just supposed to be a natural consequence of being a man, quote unquote. But unfortunately, what that does is it causes men on a very large scale to ignore some of the warning signs in their bodies, to the point where they do cross that catabolic threshold. They experience that trigger factor in one way or another, and now they're dealing with a serious illness, which, if it was caught in an earlier point, would be much less costly and much less painful in some cases to deal with. In contrast, females are really conditioned to be multitaskers. They want they're moms, they're wives, they're CEOs of major corporations. They can be den mothers. The list goes on. And as their responsibilities pile up, there's nobody that says that's enough. So they think that because I can handle this and I can handle that, well, I can handle this and that. And as that list of this's and that's grows, it becomes a lot like climbing a sand dune in terms of taking care of their health. They get up to a certain point and then they slide back down again, and then they have to struggle back up, and they keep doing that in some cases throughout their entire lives. And it really does have a detrimental impact upon their ability to deal with stress.
Yeah, that's so important. And you also talk about the women's different stages of life, that their hormones are changing, and men's too, but of course they're different.
Well, you're absolutely right. And of course, the male hormones are a lot simpler in terms of not only the operation of the male hormonal system, and we're talking primarily reproductive hormones here, but also there's much less dynamism there. You know, when a woman starts to menstruate, to have her period, those hormones start a very dynamic motion throughout her reproductive life, and that can actually continue even past menopause, depending upon their stress load. And, you know, there are specific points in a woman's life where they experience really some complications that result from stress, and those points are when they enter puberty, when they become pregnant, and when they enter menopause. And it's really the latter that I focus on in the bulk of the book on stress and gender, because if a woman has been living a chronically stressed lifestyle and then enters menopause, she may very easily outstrip her ability to deal with stress. And that swings open the door to a variety of illnesses. Typically, they are of the autoimmune type, like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, lupus, the list goes on. And so it's really important for women who are approaching menopause or postmenopausal to really manage their stress levels intelligently to avoid dealing with one of those kinds of health challenges.
That's great information. We're talking with Peter McCarthy, who is an expert on complementary and alternative medicine. He studied traditional naturopathy and also has a fascinating history as almost 40 years as a pilot. So he's seen passengers, staff, and fellow pilots going through the kinds of stresses that have influenced us all and in many cases changed our lives over the last 30 or 40 years. So I wanted Peter to go on to talk about how it benefits businesses to think in these terms of how to reduce the stresses on their staff. It affects their bottom line. It affects morale. It affects productivity, absenteeism, and so on. So can you address that for just a few minutes? We don't have much time left.
Sure, absolutely. I would like to mention just briefly, Randy, that your listeners can find the book on both Amazon.com and in Barnes & Noble. But to answer your question, it really pays business leaders to pay close attention to some of the results of the American Psychological Association's stress surveys, because within those surveys, you really have some very valuable nuggets of information on what you can do to really be able to alleviate stress in the workplace. And it's really some very simple things. So, for example, not overly rely on caffeinated beverages in the break room. Offer some healthy alternatives like maybe bottled water or fresh juice in the morning. In terms of the work schedule, it's been shown time after time and study after study that about a 10-minute break out of every hour is really going to enhance the worker's productivity. And, you know, because we're linear thinkers in Western society, we tend to think that more is always better. Well, if they can work for 1 hour, well, they ought to be able to work for 2 hours, and that's quote-unquote increasing productivity. Well, it's really not, because after a while, the body starts to have to deal with that stress, and as the stress response kicks in, the blood flow patterns in the brain shift, and you really don't have as full access to the higher mental functions of creativity, judgment, decision-making that you would otherwise if you were more relaxed. So those hourly breaks can really be a productivity enhancer. The other thing is to perhaps, even if you want to take an even more enlightened step, start to integrate wellness components into your healthcare benefits. Things like incentives for going to the gym. Maybe you can negotiate a corporate discount at a health club for your employees. Or if somebody is dealing with a weight management issue, you know, offer them some kind of incentive to continue to lose weight. Because typically speaking, obesity is a precursor to diabetes, and for every employee that you help with that issue, you're going to avoid a much more serious issue further down the road, one that your own healthcare costs are going to have to absorb. So those are just a few examples of what it is that we're dealing with in the corporate world that can be very effective in terms of alleviating employee stress, increasing productivity, and in the ultimate, reducing your healthcare costs, which are a significant part of every business's budget and will positively impact the bottom line.
Thank you so much. We need to close, but we're talking with Peter M. McCarthy, author of Adrenaline Nation, wonderful resource, full of great information and great tools for really preventing some of the chronic problems that are affecting our families and our nation. So thank you for being on Family First, Peter McCarthy, and there's always more speaking with you, and I hope the listeners will get a hold of your book.
Thank you very much, Randy. It's been a pleasure to be with you today. I hope you and your listeners have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. Take care now.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.